You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, and welcome to the Cool Project Show. I'm your host, Michelle Molyneux, and today we have Bill Hart, Executive Director at the Missouri Alliance for Historic Preservation, also known as Missouri Preservation. Bill, it is such a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me, Michelle.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you actually got the preservation and conservation bug.
I was in college as an undergraduate in the early mid-70s, 1975. I'm from a small town, but some friends of mine in St. Louis, the big city here in Missouri, bought a shell of a house in an urban neighborhood in the Lafayette Square neighborhood of St. Louis. And I was very excited at the opportunities that it provided. I think they bought their house for $600. It was really not very much of a house. I ended up helping them carry hod so that they could rebrick the back of the house. And I decided then, I think, that I wanted to move to St. Louis and become an urban pioneer myself. Done a little bit of research about historic preservation. I did find the National Trust for Historic Preservation and joined, thereby getting their preservation magazine every month. I was just really excited and bound to determine that I was going to come to St. Louis and buy my own Victorian gem in a historic neighborhood. So I think that's sort of how I got the bug, having already begun a career so that I could afford to buy a house. Did some rehabilitations of houses. I did three renovations with my sister where we would live in a flat and renovate the other one. We'd buy a two flat, live in one, renovate the other, and then vice versa. And then actually rehabbed four or five residences of my own in the meantime. After about 15 years of working in a job that I didn't really like to support my habit, I decided that it was time to do something that I really liked to do and had aspired to do for many years. And I quit my job and went back to college, getting a degree in historic preservation. After that, I went and got a master's degree in architectural history. Then I came back to my St. Louis and began a building renovation company, Janus Building Renovation Company, again in the city. And by this time, Missouri had a quite profitable program called the Missouri Historic Preservation Tax Credit, whereby you could get 25% tax credit for renovating historic buildings. So I got into that business for about 10 years, before coming to the nonprofit Missouri Preservation, where I'm currently the executive director.
Now, can you tell me a little bit about association?
Missouri Preservation is a membership-based nonprofit historic preservation advocacy organization. We were founded in 1976 as the Missouri Heritage Trust. Of course, 1976 being the year of America's Bicentennial, there was a lot of interest in preserving our history and in historic preservation at the time. So it was time for us to incorporate. We were founded by a historic real estate developer in St. Louis, a program director in the Department of Art, History, and Archaeology at the University of Missouri, and an architect from St. Louis, as well as a historic preservationist from Kansas City. Those were the four people who formed the nucleus of Missouri Preservation back in 1976. Like many nonprofits, we have three basic focuses in our work, those being education, advocacy, and recognition. Our biggest educational thrust is our three-day Missouri Preservation Conference. It presents three tracks of historic preservation educational opportunities and tours over the 3 days. We also have workshops, the most popular here in Missouri of which is utilizing the state historic tax credits. So we especially in small towns and underserved communities, try to go to those communities where there are buildings that are eligible for the tax credit and teach them how to utilize that credit in order to make historic preservation economic development. Then our biggest advocacy program of the year is what we call our Places in Peril. It's a list, essentially, of endangered historic properties throughout the state of Missouri. We do a call for nominations in the spring, usually, of each year. So the nominations for the endangered list actually come from Missouri citizens who are concerned about losing the material culture there in their various towns throughout Missouri, both large and small. And then our biggest recognition program is also our biggest feel-good program of the year, and that is our statewide Historic Preservation Honor Awards. This is a program that honors about 15 or so recipients in a ceremony at our state capitol. Usually in the spring of the year, we distribute the several awards, one of which is a Lifetime Achievement Award for a Missouri citizen that has made a lifetime contribution to historic preservation. We bestow a couple of McReynolds Awards, those being for people and projects and organizations that have long-term projects or have, for projects that have created synergy in historic preservation. And then we have about a half dozen what we call Preserve Missouri Awards, and those are for individual projects throughout the state that we recognize for being exemplary in historic preservation and its ideals and practices. In a nutshell, our three biggest focuses at Missouri Preservation. Okay. We do on a daily basis take calls from people who, a couple of weeks ago, we had somebody in a small town who was concerned that their mayor was going to tear down the city hall, a building that was constructed in 1940, a WPA project here. We unfortunately learned about it too late to really have any effect. And a lot of times, once people in small towns know that you're trying to advocate for preservation, we'll fast track a demolition, and that's indeed what happened there. We get today, I got a call from someone who is trying to sell a historic building. They're not able to get their desired price, and their real estate agent has suggested that they demolish the house so that they can get a better price on an empty lot. So the questions and issues are kind of all over the place. We see lots of disuse of rural properties, farmsteads and barns, and in response to that, we actually started Missouri's first barn alliance. We call it MoBarn, the Missouri Barn Alliance and Rural Network, where we're seeking to document historic farmsteads before they're lost and make them a part of the state's database, an architectural survey database.
Very important. There's lots of history in barns.
Absolutely.
So now, how do you get funded? How does your organization get funded?
We are a membership organization. Most of our money comes from our members, memberships, corporate members. We do, at our State Historic Preservation Conference, have a trade show component where we do collect revenue, some revenues from the trade show and various aspects of our activities, including speakers' fees for workshops and the like. We do get a grant from our State Historic Preservation Office here in Missouri. We have a great relationship with them. And we actually have another current grant to create video presentations about how to use our state historic preservation tax credits. But again, by and far, our funds come from Missouri citizens, from our individual members and corporate members.
Now, tell us about the Statewide Preservation Honors Award. Like you said, it's a very happy event.
It is. Yes, indeed. The Preservation Honor Awards have been around for, I think, about 35 of our 40 years. We're having our 40th anniversary this year. This year, the 2016 Preservation Honor Awards were held on April 21st, 2016, and honored lots of very important people and some people very dear to our hearts at Missouri Preservation. The Elizabeth and George Rozier Award, our Lifetime Achievement Award, went to one of our former board members and one of our advisory board members currently, Jerry Friedman, who had worked early on to help legislators realize that historic preservation could indeed become economic development by fostering the state historic preservation tax credit program. Our tax credit program here in Missouri, through this program alone, over $7.5 billion worth of private investment has gone into the restoration and renovation of historic buildings throughout Missouri. That represents over 2,700 projects in 72 communities throughout Missouri, creating over 72,000 construction jobs and 22,000 permanent jobs since its inception in 1998. The McReynolds Awards, the awards that I was telling you about, go toward recognizing projects that have created synergy or long-term projects. One of them went to the city of Florissant for some video productions that they call Florissant Historic Treasures. They were published on YouTube and proudly promote the historic resources in their community, which is in suburban St. Louis County. Another one of our McReynolds Awards went to the Wyeth Tootle Mansion for their renovation and community engagement project, restoration, both interior and exterior, over several years of their beautiful museum complex in the Wyeth Tootle Mansion in St. Joseph, Missouri. A third McReynolds Award went to our friend Patty Maher and her Tiger Lily Development Company for renovating abandoned historic buildings in South St. Louis, and incorporating the ideals of Energy Star rating, energy efficiency rating, in all of her projects. We have one category for it's called our Osmond Overby Award. Osmond Overby being one of our founders. It recognizes a published work that kind of focuses on the architectural history of Missouri. This year, they went a little high. Instead of going highbrow, went a little lowbrow and actually presented their executive director, me, with an award. The Osmond Overby Award went to Historic Missouri Roadsides, a sort of travel and history book of small-town Missouri, compiled in six roadside tours of Missouri on mostly two-lane highways. Then there are the several Preserve Missouri Awards, which go to individual projects. One of them went to, it's now called the Boo Cat Club. It was the former St. Louis Artists Guild building that was repurposed as an event venue in St. Louis's Central West End. The Arcade Building, a 15-story arcade and apartment building representing probably the largest apartment development in downtown St. Louis in over 30 years. The third one was for Hers Luxury Living, a former department store in downtown Springfield, Missouri, that had been turned into luxury apartments after being shuttered for about 20 years. Another Preserve Missouri Award went to the historic Truman Courthouse interior renovation in Jackson County in Independence, Missouri. Another Preserve Missouri Award went to the Linwood Area Ministry Place, a former Presbyterian church that was repurposed as social services, neighborhood center, and incubator for small businesses. And then the second-to-last Preserve Missouri Award went to a place called Linwood Lawn, a former plantation house in Lexington in Lafayette County, again, a huge mansion converted into a special events place. And then the final Preserve Missouri Award went to the St. Charles Old Post Office in St. Charles, Missouri. This building had been disused and inappropriately renovated and added to over the years. It was restored using the historic preservation tax credits here and is now a tech incubator for the city of St. Charles and surrounding area here in Missouri. So just a lot of interesting projects, a lot of interesting people, and just a wonderful way for us to be able to recognize the good work that's being done in historic preservation here in Missouri.
Wow, that's amazing. We'll be back with Bill Hart after these short messages.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Your auto love and investment demands the best, and for 45 years, Passport Transport has been meeting those demands. From manufacturers to the one-car collectors and all other facets of the auto industry and antique auto hobby. The first and the finest with unequaled service and peace of mind. Passport Transport, your auto transportation company. Contact PassportTransport.com with your need today. Passport Transport.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show. With us we have Bill Hart, who has a passion for the preservation of architectural and historic landmarks that embodies Missouri's unique heritage. Can you also talk to us about the Missouri Places in Peril list as well, and how is this list generated?
As in our statewide preservation honor awards, the nominations to our Places in Peril come from Missouri citizens statewide, recognizing historic places, objects, districts, buildings for a number of reasons. They could, the reasons for their endangered could be lack of maintenance or funds for maintenance, could be development pressures, could be demolition by neglect by their owners. It could be the planned obsolescence of them by state and local planning organizations. But again, the nominations come from all over the state. We had several in the St. Louis and Kansas City, of course, areas, but had a couple from southwest Missouri, one from northeast Missouri, another one from central Missouri here in 2016, representing a pretty good cross-section geographically from throughout the state. This program began about 15 years ago and still serves primarily as a media campaign aimed at calling attention to endangered historic places, sort of blowing the whistle as a last call for important historic places, important to Missourians specifically, that are in danger of being lost if something doesn't happen. We do try to work with these places in peril throughout the year, trying to help market them, trying to convince owners and planning agencies, cities, counties, to preserve them, and also trying to find help find funds for renovation, including again showing people how to use the tax credits, helping them to apply for grants and loans for their individual projects, and a lot of times helping the people who've nominated them to do kind of grassroots organizing to try to save buildings, which could include petitioning their county officials or others to save the buildings that are important to them. This year we had several new additions to the list, and then we also have a watched list of properties that may have been listed before, or their threat may not be as pointed as in other projects. But we do have a sort of step down list in addition to our regular list. Until last year, our Places in Peril was known as our most endangered historic places. We kind of rebranded the program to help better describe exactly what it is. We had people before saying, "When do I find out if I am the most endangered historic place?" So we decided it's time to change our name and our focus. And we usually had a press conference at one of the historic places that was in peril, and sometimes we could literally be in the middle of a cornfield. So trying to get more people to the table and to the presentation and the announcement, we changed it up last year. Instead of doing a press conference, we had a party, and we called it an unhappy hour, where we had cocktails and had a fun social time, and then did our announcement later on in the evening of the places in peril for 2015. Those places included actually two bridges. A lot of bridges that were built during the advent of the Highway Administration in the 20s and 30s, and a lot of those are obsolete now. A lot of them are too small for the volume of traffic. The Bend Road Bridge in Pacific and Franklin County was one such bridge that the county commissioners were seeking to take out. Another historic building, the Livestock Exchange Building in St. Joseph. Joseph was started out as pretty much a cattle town, and they had a huge Livestock Exchange Building from that era, which is no longer being utilized. It's abandoned. It's very architecturally significant and obviously a big part of St. Joseph's history. The old calaboose or jail in Ellsbury, this really small town, they have an old stone jail building that needs repairs, and they were calling attention to the lack of maintenance and lack of funds for maintenance at the jail. We had, for the second or third time, actually the fourth time, a mid-century modern addition to our Places in Peril, the former Faith Salem Church in Jennings in St. Louis County, the work of Thomas Dunn, a locally prominent mid-century architect that's now vacant. An old general store building in the town of Phillipsburg in Laclede County. Obviously, when a lot of small downtowns have been, the businesses have been inched out by the big box stores, and this represents the emptying out of little Phillipsburg in Laclede County, Missouri. Woodside, a former plantation house in one of the inner ring suburbs in St. Louis and St. Louis County in Maplewood, owned by the city, and it's been on the list for several years. There's kind of development pressures there, as well as I think maybe a little bit unrealistic expectations by the city. Several building complex along Armour Boulevard in Kansas City in Jackson County. These buildings bought by a developer with the understanding that they're going to be renovated. The owners decided that it wasn't economically feasible and that they really needed to get rid of them and build new. We did convince them to save 100 through 118 West Armour Boulevard, and they're currently undergoing renovation, so we're really excited about that. One building that had been on our endangered list before and returned to it, the John Myers House, again in Florissant, that's in St. Louis County, in suburban St. Louis County. It was an old barn and a huge Italianate farmhouse that had been saved once already by historic Florissant from highway construction, and this time the owners lost the property. It went into foreclosure. Luckily, it was auctioned off this past summer. To a preservation-minded owner. The Route 66 Gasconade River Bridge in Hazel Green in Laclede County, a very important steel pony truss bridge on very internationally popular Route 66. A ticket office from Excelsior Springs, Missouri in Clay County. This was a former health spa and Salubrious Springs city that grew up. It's one of the last remaining buildings that supported the spring culture there in Excelsior Springs. The James Clemens House, a beautiful Palladian Greek Revival mansion in the city of St. Louis on its north side, bought by a developer and left to basically demolition by neglect. the Kemper Military School and College Administration Building in Boonville in the center of Missouri in Cooper County, the former administration building of a military school that had been closed for several years, two buildings on the campus of the University of Missouri, St. Louis, those two buildings being its alumni center in a former historic home, and its Honors College building and dorm, which is a former Roman Catholic convent for nuns. We actually learned late last summer that the University of Missouri had actually recalled its demolition contract with its contractor, saying that they were going to look for a developer that respected and would keep the historic buildings. Again, saying that it was public pressure that that made them decide to do that. So we're very happy that that our program achieved its intended goal there. The Philip Kays House, a house in Sherman, Missouri, in a state park. Not unlike many houses in state parks that are suffering from lack of maintenance, but because of lack of funds in the state parks budget. And then the last one was Greenwood Cemetery in Hillsdale, St. Louis County building. This is a very interesting historic site. Prior to the turn of the century, the 20th century, African Americans, no matter their standing in life, their economic means, did not have cemeteries that catered to African American clientele. So no matter who you were socially, economically, in the African American community, if you were black and you died, you went to the pauper's cemetery, the cemetery that was owned usually by the state or the city. And so Greenwood Cemetery was actually St. Louis County's first commercial cemetery that catered to an African American clientele. So it's very important. But at the same time, the cemetery suffered by lack of a perpetual care fund, so lots of the plots became overgrown with brush and weeds, and it turned into a kind of a dangerous place. This Greenwood Cemetery has made strides and gotten support from several community partners, including some businesses, to help clean up the cemetery and reuse it for probably a passive park, bicycling and walking kind of paths. So that was our big list. We had another Route 66 bridge in St. Louis County on our watch list, the Henry Miller House, the oldest house in Stoddard County, the Frank Summer House, which is called the Cracker House in St. Joseph in Buchanan County, named the Cracker House because Frank Summer owned the National Baking Company, which later became Nabisco, and he's credited with inventing the saltine cracker, of all things. We had an old, we had a mausoleum and another cemetery on our watch list, a Route 66 roadhouse, the Diamonds Cafe, a traditionally African-American hospital in Kansas City, the Wheatley Provident Hospital, the Kemper Arena, again, a mid-century modern arena in St. Louis, the Zion African Methodist Episcopal Church in Lexington in Lafayette County, the Russell Hotel in Charleston, Mississippi County, down in southeast Missouri, another kind of roadhouse, but actually for the railroad, the Houston House in Newburgh in Phelps County on our watch list. And that kind of rounded out our list and included some of the watched properties that had been on our our endangered list in the past, and were kind of our step down properties, because they had a lot of these places have had some significant activity, but are still not out of the woods as far as they're being endangered.
We'll be right back on America's Web Radio with Bill Hart, and we'll also talk about his book. Yes, Bill is also an author. We'll be right back.
45 years of experience is behind the most trusted name in auto transportation. Passport Transport, the first and finest today. That's why Passport Transport is the preferred auto transport for major auto manufacturers, concours, museums, tours, and collectors, and should be your choice from across the state to across the country. When you have the need, go to PassportTransport.com and enjoy the peace of mind referenced experience will give you. Passport Transport.
When four members of Congress all die within 4 months, each of their deaths appears to be from natural causes. But when mysterious messages begin to appear in the form of quotations from long-dead revolutionary heroes, one reporter sets out to prove the existence of a serial killer. His search discovers dark secrets and an assassin shielded by people who need the very services that only he can provide. The Sun Silas Rising, a novel by Doug Dahlgren. On Kindle or paperback through Amazon.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show. And today we're talking with Bill Hahn, who is an author and an advocate of preservation of the historic sites in Missouri. Bill, I know that there is a bit of a battle between the preservation of a historic site and developers wanting to build new. Can you give me some insight on your views over that?
Of course, I understand the MO of developers. They are in business, and they are in business to make money, and a lot of times they might see the preservation of a historic building in the way of their projects. I, especially here in Missouri, try to point them toward some projects or programs that actually help them in the preservation of historic buildings, namely our Historic Preservation Tax Credit Program, which allows a 25% credit on the developer's Missouri taxes for renovating a historic building. And the three basic premises are that you are obviously renovating a historic building. It needs to be listed on the National Register of Historic Places, either individually or as a contributing part of a district. You need to reinvest at least 50% of the basis of the project back into the building in your improvements. So if you bought a building for $50,000, say, you need to be reinvesting at least $25,000 back into the renovation of the building. And the third basic premise is that you follow the Secretary of the Interior Standards for Historic Rehabilitation. So that's those are a nationally set of, I call them the Ten Commandments of what you do or don't do with a historic building. And so that really helps us make historic preservation a vehicle for economic development. So that really helps developers. As far as other reasons, if there aren't tax credits or any financial incentives, there are obviously those intrinsic values that cause us to want to preserve our history. It calls to mind a recent situation here in South Central Missouri. Last week, I actually went to the small town because three times now, the school board in the small town has proposed demolishing the high school building. And the building is not so significant architecturally, although it's a very attractive kind of collegiate-style brick building, substantial building for a small town. But it's very important for the history of the town. The high school building was built in the 1920s. It was right after an influenza epidemic wiped out a significant part of the town's population. They were without a lot of money. They discovered when they submitted their plans to a developer or a contractor that the costs were going to be probably double what they had expected. And so this building represents the coming together of this community. They actually donated the building materials, milled the lumber, laid the bricks in the construction of this building. So it represents a definite, I would say, if history is words on a printed page, the material culture and the buildings that are referred to in them are the illustrations of that history. So you know, this building, this high school building, while it may seem insignificant to the school board who wants to redevelop or clean up their campus, it actually represents a very important tie to the society, to the people, and to the history of this town. And, you know, without that high school building standing there, that link to this town's history is obliterated. It no longer exists. Its history has been erased. So these buildings and historic places represent a very important part of our collective memory that needs to be preserved. And as I said, here in Missouri, we have a great tax credit program that helps us financially incentivize the renovation and preservation of these historic buildings.
Now, you're also an author, and you've written a book called The Historic Missouri Road Sites. I'd love to hear more about the book and some of the road tours in the book.
Thank you for asking about the book. It was my baby for about a year. The book was published last July. It consists of essentially six road trips of Missouri on two-lane highways. So it's basically, let's say it's a hybrid history book, travel book, and photography book. So it's very lavishly illustrated with lots of photos. I always claim to people that I endanger the life of myself and others on a daily basis traveling on Missouri roads, stopping to take photographs of important buildings, and especially in the hinterlands when you're far out in rural Missouri. If a building looks like it may be endangered for one reason or another, I will try it at all costs to stop and document that, at least by taking a photo, because if not the last time that maybe somebody recognizes this historic place, it may be the only time that somebody has actually documented that building or that barn or that farm or that bridge or that house along the roadside. So there are lots of photos aimed at calling people's attention to a lot of times endangered buildings. So they're not all pretty pictures, a lot of rusted out automobiles and ramshackle buildings, but nonetheless, I think picturesque. But basically what each road trip does is it provides a small history on each of the counties and the towns that are being traversed in the book. It offers photographs of local historic places and sites and interesting scenery. And then it tries to bring historic or heritage tourism to the microcosm by also listing, you know, like a travel book,
right,
places to eat, stay, visit, and festivals and things to attend in these small towns. In my book, however, I don't list any McDonald's or Walmarts or Holiday Inns. I only list locally owned mom-and-pop motels and bed and breakfasts, local stores and boutiques, and those restaurants and places to eat at that are only owned by Missouri's citizens to help us bring economic vitality back to these small towns. Suburban and rural America actually is at a crisis point now because, if the factories left, a lot of the people left. If the railroad, when the railroad traffic left, a lot of the commerce left and people left, you know. In the age of agribusiness, fewer people are choosing to be farmers and you know, that's leaving behind lots of empty barns and farmsteads throughout the state. So it's calling attention to interesting historic places, showing you photos of them, and then helping to provide an interesting and unique experience for travelers, and also being able to help out small businesses throughout the towns that the people are visiting.
Tell us about some of these small towns in your book.
Oh, gosh, they're all kind of all over the place. It's not actually on one of the trip, but I at the beginning of the book, I kind of point out that the book is about people like Scotty Walker. And Scotty Walker is the first picture that you'll see is a picture of Scotty Walker. It's in a small town called Holden, Missouri. He owns Walker's Dry Goods Company. And I was asked to come to this town to help them assess whether there were historic resources worthy of preservation in this little town. Well, of course, it didn't take me long to find lots of awesome places, but one of them being an old hotel that was closed because the train didn't come through anymore, passenger trains didn't come through anymore. But they took me to a building. The person had it was a historic building, and the person had a question about it. But I walked into the building, and it was Walker's Dry Goods on the stoop on the at the storefront were hanging baskets and all kinds of garden plants and seasonal items for sale. I walked in. There was an art store in one corner. There was an electronics store in another corner, housewares in one. There was a huge fabric and sewing store where there were bicycles hanging from the ceiling above the sewing machine. It was just an awesome store. It brought back memories of my childhood and a time when it was still easy to make a living in retailing in a small town. Everybody who walked in knew Scotty and knew his family and trusted him. And the first thing I asked was, there's not a Walmart here, is there? You know, and they said, no, they've never been able to attract one. And I was just like, praise God, they haven't been able to put one here yet. Because it's the main reason why Walker's Dry Goods is still there. But a lot of these small towns are, they kind of run the gamut. One of my favorite little towns is a little town called Bonnet's Mill. Bonnet's Mill is at the confluence of two small rivers, and it's a beautiful little river town. You have to be going to Bonnet's Mill to get to Bonnet's Mill because it's at the end of the road, and there's no bridge over the river at the end of the road. But it's a very interesting place, and I always find out something interesting about these small towns. Bonnet's Mill still has its original newspaper called The Unterrified Democrat, which is a carryover from the Civil War, of course, and doesn't mean is the antithesis of what Democrat means today.
Yeah.
But it was really awesome place. There's a little town called Clarksville that had a little complex called the Village of the Blue Rose. It had some of the most beautiful views of the Mississippi River from bluffs that I've ever seen. It was owned by a woman named Rose Gronemeyer, hence the name The Village of the Blue Rose, who used to be a special education teacher. She worried about her students and what would happen to her students after their educational experience, and she actually opened a bed and breakfast, a thrift shop, and a restaurant where she employs mentally retarded, developmentally disabled people to work at the restaurant and the bed and breakfast. So it's just a great place with a great message. There was a little town called Frankenstein, Missouri. That was a fun little place to visit where I found upon the re-release of Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein as a publicity stunt. They parachuted 12 Frankenstein monsters onto the football field of this town. There was a great little restaurant called the Pie Safe. It's in an old bank in this little town called Pocahontas, Missouri. It was a wonderful find. I had no idea I would even find this little treasure. The Pie Safe Cafe and Bakery is owned by Sharon Penrod, a woman who is farm to table, actually produces much of the product that she bakes and serves for lunch at her local restaurant. Just a plethora of really fun places, interesting places, lots of Route 66 places, including lots of motels that are still in business.
Well, I'll tell you what, when we come back in the last segment, let's talk about some more of these great little gems in Missouri, and then also how we can get a hold of you and your book. We'll be right back on America's Web Radio.
Your auto love and investment demands the best, and for 45 years, Passport Transport has been meeting those demands. From manufacturers to the one-car collectors and all other facets of the auto industry and antique auto hobby. The first and the finest with unequaled service and peace of mind. Passport Transport, your auto transportation company. Contact PassportTransport.com with your need today. Passport Transport.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show. This is our last segment for the show, unfortunately. We have with us Bill, who is an author and very passionate about the restoration and preservation of buildings and communities in the state of Missouri. Bill, just before the break, we were talking about your book, The Historic Missouri Roadsides, and some of the amazing town histories that you were talking about. Can you tell us some more of them? Because it was so fascinating.
Sure. You know, what I might do is talk to you a little bit about the six trips that that are in the book. One of them is Missouri Highway 79. Much of Highway 79 is a national historic roadside. It offers amazing views of the Mississippi River as the driver heads north from the St. Louis metropolitan area, following the river along the eastern border of Missouri up to the Iowa border, bordering on the Mississippi. So lots of beautiful river towns. There's another one called the El Camino Real. This being most roads developed because of Native American trails. And this one is follows the Mississippi River heading south from St. Louis down to the boot heel of Missouri, which in a little town called New Madrid. It's New Madrid to most people. But, you know, the Missouri was a part of the territory of Louisiana, and it was alternately owned for several years by the French and the Spanish. And the Spanish intended to use New Madrid in southeast Missouri as the center of their new empire in the Western world here in Missouri and Louisiana. So this provided the El Camino Real provided a trade route between the established settlement of St. Louis, founded in the early 1700s, down to New Madrid in the southeast Missouri area. Then there's another one called the Route 100 of the Gottfried, Duden, and Lewis Clark Trails. This follows basically the Missouri River and was actually a part of the trail used by Lewis and Clark on their tour of discovery. And it was also popularized by a man named Gottfried Duden, who toured toured America in the 1830s and 40s and took back his recommendations for settlement of this part of the central United States by German immigrants. He considered Germany to be increasingly crowded and overbuilt and was encouraging people to emigrate to the United States. And a lot of towns along this trail, the Route 100 trail, have German names: Hermann, Missouri, German wine country. Actually, the county seat of Gasconade County, Hermann, looks very much like a German city on the Rhine, only it's on the Missouri River. So lots of the settlement, the housing, and the buildings remind one of of a small town on the Rhine. There's another trip called the Osage Hills and Prairies that basically follows the several routes used by the Osage Indians, one of the largest tribes of Native Americans in Missouri. That traverses two or three times parts of Route 66, the historic roadway from the 1920s. There's one called mostly Route 24, which actually crisscrosses the state from west to east, from basically the St. Joe area in a little town called Excelsior Springs over to a small town called New London on the eastern side of the state. And then the last tour is called the Platte Purchase, being the section of Missouri that is the furthest northwestern part of Missouri. It's a little part of Missouri that juts out over into Kansas and Nebraska and borders on the north state of Iowa. But Missouri was incorporated as a state and accepted to the Union in 1821, and until 1839, this part of Missouri had not actually been geographically included in the state of Missouri. And so this trip goes basically along that acreage that was called the Platte Purchase and then heads just south of the Iowa border, about halfway, three-quarters of the way across the state of Missouri, just south of the Iowa border. So lots of fun places, lots of diversity, both in topography and the people who lived there. There's a little part of Missouri on Highway 24 called Little Dixie. This is where lots of people emigrated from the Carolinas and Virginia and represented Southern tastes and proclivities, and includes lots of really great little towns. There's a little town called Brunswick, which is actually still known as the pecan capital of Missouri, where they have a 2,500-pound monument to the pecan built of concrete in the middle of the state. A little town called Keatsville, which was home to the Confederate General Sterling Price, a famous Confederate general. Just lots of Paris, Missouri, where the last courthouse in Missouri with a dome was built. Florida, Missouri, which was the birthplace of Samuel Clemens, also known as Mark Twain. And, of course, Hannibal, where Mark Twain or Samuel Clemens spent most of his life, is on another one of the trips. Some really wonderful buildings, especially Victorian mansions in the town of St. Joe. Lots of, again, like I said, not so happy towns. Burlington Junction comes to mind, a place where Burlington Northern Depot lies in ruin, and actually most of the train tracks are actually removed from the town as well. So it's not all pretty pictures, but lots of calls attention to a lot of historic buildings and places that I believe are worthy of preservation.
Now, do you actually do some preservation yourself?
I live in a house that I served as the developer and general contractor for. When I left graduate school, moved back to St. Louis before I took a job with Missouri Preservation, I had a building development company and served as a kind of a small developer and a general contractor. I think I did about 25 projects there, 25 units that were mostly emptied or abandoned buildings that I used the state's historic preservation tax credit and other city incentives in St. Louis in order to rehabilitate and then turn back into single-family houses. Keep combining my two goals of historic preservation and neighborhood stabilization at the same time.
Now, one of the things we were actually talking about during the break was getting kids into restoration. Do you find that is a very difficult uphill task, given the way kids are so engrossed in new technologies?
It is, and there are ways that we can appeal to them. I travel around the state of Missouri and talk to lots of historical societies and have audiences with people who are interested in historic places. And I do lament the fact to most of them, you know, at one forum we had about historic preservation, there were lots of people, but not one young person. So, you know, I said, I'm very encouraged by your presence here tonight. I'm concerned about the absence of one group, though, and that is your children and your grandchildren. Where I do see friends, historic preservation friends, bring their children with them, I notice that the children are much more interested and engrossed in what we are trying to do. But again, trying to bring those young people to the table of historic preservation is difficult. And I think what we do is, one thing that's definitely fostered an interest in historic preservation among millennials in particular is the mid-century modern movement, the buildings that are now coming of age. You know, to be listed on the National Register of Historic Places, one of the basic criteria is that you have to be at least 50 years old. So a lot of the buildings that were constructed, the ranch homes that were constructed in the 1960s, are now coming of age, and that's a really cool thing to a lot of people, you know, restoring mid-century modern treasures. Another way that we've been able to lure young folks into historic preservation is, you know, most young people, and, you know, I have to confess myself, spend a lot of time looking down instead of around. We're looking at, instead of around ourselves, at important people and places and things, we're looking at our iPhones. We're communicating by that phone and are tethered to that telephone. Well, a lot of people have used that technology in order to engage people and bring people to historic preservation by doing tours that are GPS oriented, by doing automated house tours and architecture tours. And so I think once we get fully kind of ingratiated through electronic media, that we'll have better chances for our young people to appreciate and preserve those places that really do matter and that do contribute to a sense of place and community for all of us.
Right. Now, before we go, how do we get a hold of you, and also how do we get a hold of the amazing book that you've written?
Of the book? Well, I actually prefer that you buy the book from my website. It's called historicmissourirodesides.com. That's historicmissourirodesides, all one string, .com. If you buy it through the website, I'll be happy to autograph and send out the copy personally to you. You can also buy the book through the usual mass outlets. It's available through Amazon. It's available at Barnes & Noble, both online and in Barnes & Noble stores. At least in Missouri, it's available locally at locally owned bookstores as well. But anyway, the preferred distribution is historicmissourirodesides.com. And you can contact me either at historicmissourirodesides@yahoo.com, or you can contact me professionally at Missouri Preservation at preservemo10, preservemo10@yahoo.com.
That's fantastic. Bill, I really do want to thank you being on the Cool Project show. It was such an amazing, hearing about all of these amazing heritage projects that's going around Missouri. You have a very amazing, fun job as executive director of Missouri Preservation. If you want to get a hold of me, or if you have a project of interest, please drop us an email at coolprojects@americaswebradio.com. We will also have additional links and information on the Missouri Preservation and on Bill Hart on our coolprojects.com website, and it'll be under the tag America's Web Radio. So, Bill, thank you once again for being on the show. I really do appreciate that.
Thank you so much, Michelle, for having me. I do indeed have my dream job, and I appreciate the opportunity to really talk about what I love. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was my pleasure, and we'll have to have you back on again, okay? So thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye for now.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.